But for those listening, you can hear me. All right, that's nice. 3 seconds of dead air. All right, so we are live here. Let me bring up Mr. Cody's mic here, too. So welcome. Well, let's have a real professional opening here. Welcome to the Hack 100 and Radio Show. I'm your host, Jim Minadio, and I'm the president of Zero Surge, a manufacturer of power quality filters that are used for surge-protecting sensitive electronics. With Zero Surge, you have peace of mind that your electronics are kept safe. For today's show, I'll be talking to local businessman, bon vivant, slash actor, slash musician, slash whatever, and privacy expert, Cody Hofstetter, who, not Corey Hofstetter, Cody Hofstetter, although that would be your secret name is probably Corey Hofstetter, right?
Not different enough.
Oh, darn it. Who is on the winning team for the first Hack 100 in Hackathon. And as always, I'll end up the show with some historical story that ties in with the theme of the show. So today we'll tell the tale of the first distributed computer virus, and surprise, it was on an Apple II computer. But first, the weather. Didn't pull it up, but I can tell by looking outside, it is stormy out there, and it is going to be stormy for the next 12 hours or so. And then after that, I did see earlier, we're going to have some really good weather. We have the corn and tomato chowder, or tomato chowder, corn and tomato festival. Right, this weekend on Stangle Road, so check that out.
I did not know that.
You didn't know that? There's signs all over town.
I haven't been here.
You haven't been in town. That's right. Cody just basically, you've been out of the country too, right?
Yeah, I just came back from Italy and France.
Okay, so yeah, so that's this weekend, so check it out. I won't be able to do it either because I'll be out of town myself. And also, I'd like to just shout out to all the other chamber shows. You should check them out. Devin has a show called Curate. Joe Peters has a real estate show. Mark has a show with the Max Challenge. Just go to the Chamber Facebook page, and you can check out all the other shows. And the Chamber website also has the information about the other shows. So I'd like to start promoting those shows, too, if you're watching mine. And
which you are.
Yes. okay, so let's get into this. So I'll introduce, give everybody who Cody's official introduction here that he helped me send me. He's an entrepreneur at heart, or as he says, he's afflicted with severe attention problems. his background is originally in finance, and he's been forming and buying companies since he was the age of 19. So what, about a year? You look like you're only about 20, right?
28, yeah.
Yeah, so about 9 years. His main focus is as the founder and CEO of an IT cybersecurity firm specializing in penetration testing, vulnerability, and physical assessments, exploit development, forensic investigation, well, that's a lot, and advanced data recovery and destruction, hopefully in the right order. some of his other ventures include owning a finance day trading firm, a community-focused healthy restaurant, which is also a food truck now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Presenting talks nationwide, as a certified personal trainer. He looks like he's in shape. He's a lyricist and songwriter for several musicians. He's in an upcoming TV series and a film in addition to other acting credits. If you'd like to hear more about his other endeavors or have specific questions, he does love meeting people, and he will talk to anybody for any reason at any time, as long as he's available. So welcome, Cody.
Thank you.
So
thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming. I've known Cody since pretty much the first hackathon, so a couple of years now, and he has some interesting stories. Some of them probably not right for the radio, but
ask me in person.
He does live a good life. He is very busy. So let's talk with some of the news items that I pulled. The first one we'll talk about is about Marriott. So as with all these other big companies lately, they experienced a data breach back in – I thought I had it in front of me here. It was going back to 2014, I guess. So there was some credit card information exposed, including passport information. 383 million guest records were exposed, so people know where you were going, you know, because Marriott is you know, probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, hotel chain in the world. So the cost of that breach, they're finally putting it on their books. And the latest quarter was $126 million charge. So, you know, the lesson here is cybersecurity is an expensive proposition if you don't do it. It's a lot cheaper to hire people to do it than it is to not. You probably could have hired five of the best cybersecurity firms for less than $126 million.
You definitely could have.
You know, or at least a good teenager that's a good hacker.
Just find a find a local teenager and be like, hey, you know security stuff?
And they still are facing a fine of $120 million in the UK. So these numbers are going to go up as things go on. And so kind of dovetailing into that, there was an article in the Washington Post today about how there's a the Department of Justice does go after hackers. They do prosecute them for various reasons. And so the community, the cybersecurity community has a very contentious tempestuous relationship with the DOJ because they see each other as adversaries. But there's this one lonely soldier, Leonard Bailey. He's on a mission to try to improve the two communities. So he does go to the different conferences. He goes out to Vegas. And he said originally when he started going a few years ago, he spent half the time being yelled at by people. You know, get out of our computer. Stop letting us, you know, hide, you know, not let us test things or hide things. And so he's trying to get involved in outreach. He's trying to get the DOJ to stop going after people who are, like, legitimately researching security holes.
And to specify, he's a security researcher, I imagine.
He's with the DOJ, so he's let's see if they gave him his official title. He's the head of the cybersecurity unit for the DOJ for computer crimes. So, you know, he is somebody who is high up enough that he has the ear of the attorney general, and he's trying to, you know, get people, you know, on the same table and say, hey, look, there are some companies that are doing this for research purposes. They're doing good in the cyber world. They're not always just doing bad things. Like the one famous example, that British security researcher who stopped the WannaCry attack was then charged under the
Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
Exactly. The CFAA.
That's also why he was here on a conference, and when he went to leave is when they nabbed him.
Yeah. So, you know, for developing and selling malicious software. So, you know, this guy Bailey is acknowledging that there is a conflict. And one of the things he's trying to do is try to create an ethical approach to hacking, kind of like a guideline thing. And he also wants the older hacking community to get involved with the newer kids coming in, to give them a path so they have a proper path for cybersecurity and positive hacking, which is kind of what Hack Hunter'd in. I mean, we're kind of the positive end of that. And like, I have a neighbor who's, when he was in high school, he was doing cybersecurity for email and created a company. And so you want that kid to be doing positive things for the world, not going the wrong way and just fiddling around for just for fun or, you know, for malicious reasons. So
for that in particular, I, from my personal opinion, I really don't think that it has necessarily a lot to do with making sure that everybody is focused or establishing new ethical guidelines, because the guidelines are already there. What's, in my opinion, really happening is that when these security researchers start looking at security holes in products that these companies have put out, once these individuals actually find the security flaws and they go to notify the company essentially says that's proprietary, or they hide behind their obfuscation. And so as opposed to properly addressing security holes in their product, they just want to cover it up.
Yeah. Yeah. They did mention that a little bit in the article too. Just want to make sure my time is right here. So yeah, so that's, you know, it's a big issue in this world, and it's, you know, I think that, there's a lot of, it's the government, it's the private industry, and then the private citizen, and they're not all working together. Because there are, you know, I guess there's some legitimate reasons for each side, because, like, the companies do have a product that they spend a lot of money developing, and they have to protect it at some point. So there is some you know, credence in that. But then, you know, because their product is being used for very important things, they should also own up when they make mistakes too. So,
or even if they're putting their consumer at risk.
Right, right. Okay, so the last article is just a local thing, a New Jersey item that I found in the NJBIA newsletter. It's in their magazine. It's about the manufacturing scorecard for 2019 that Ball State University Center for Business and Economic Research puts out every year. And we improved as a state from B+ to A for our productivity and innovation as a result of a relative increase in manufacturing productivity from the previous year. So we're doing a great job compared to even our local neighbor states. New York gets a C+. Pennsylvania gets a C. You know, so as an innovative state, a productive state, we're very productive, very innovative. We come out with all this stuff, but then you look at further other...
The rest of the grading,
it's C and lower. For the ones that you would expect, tax, climate, liability gap.
What exactly is our tax climate rating there?
That would be an F. benefit costs, you know, logistics, while maintaining its, let's see. We did improve a little bit on logistics. I'm surprised we're not higher in logistics, being that we are the hub for so many
things. I agree with that.
But, you know, that's probably a nationwide thing. I doubt there's that many states that are really great in logistics, because it's just you know, our infrastructure is so
we're
bad.
Also densely populated as well, though, yeah, in New
so,
Jersey.
Yeah, so there's a lot more traffic jams and stuff, probably delayed shipments and things like that. But we also are the port of entry for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So goods get here first before they'll get to PA, because they got to stop mm-hmm. here along the way. So I don't know how they grade that aspect of it. But, you know, so we have some positive things in New Jersey. It's just we have to work on our other things, obviously. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with Cody.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we're back here with Cody Hofstetter to talk about two things. We'll talk about you know, starting businesses, running businesses, and then you know, maybe have you sold your businesses yet? Have you sold any?
The only one that I don't currently have is the finance and day trading one, because I moved all of those into long-term holdings.
Okay. Did you sell them to somebody, or you just moved all your stuff?
Just moved everything over. Okay. Because made a little bit of money doing that.
Are you
and
sure?
Then moved everything over.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, and then we'll talk about after the next break, then we'll get into the security stuff. So What was your first business then? You said in 19 you started. What was the first one?
That was actually the finance and day trading company.
Okay.
So prior to that, I had actually worked as a air/commercial/industrial engineer. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially fancy speak for how air moves through like ductings, how clean air rooms stay clean, mm-hmm. how you filtrate out the dust out of wood shops, sugar factories, for example. If you don't actually filtrate out the air in a sugar factory, it'll explode.
Sure.
So 100%, make sure you filter your air out of there. So things like that, dealing with chemicals that essentially you don't want to be breathing in, all that fun sort of stuff. And that was actually my father and grandfather's business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had been working for
So it was like them. An apprenticeship kind of thing? You mm-hmm. were learning how that business ran from the inside?
Mm-hmm. So I had been working with them, and I was sitting in the office one day, and I'm like, man, this is boring as hell. I definitely cannot be doing this for the rest of my life. So I considered my options, and I was like, what else can I do that I feel like I would actually have more fun doing? I would have more time and would actually allow me to increase my pay grade as well. So I had previously had a background in finance from high school. My business teacher, Miss Bruno, shout out to Miss Bruno.
Hey.
Love you.
Which school was this?
That was actually at South Hunterdon.
South Hunterdon, okay.
So, went to South, had Miss Bruno, was part of the FBLA, which is the Future Business Leaders of America.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, when I went through everything, I also took all of the information and started studying for a financial advisor, so an investment mm-hmm. advisor perspective.
Right.
I did it specifically for myself, and when you actually go to take the tests, you need to get sponsored by like a bank or some other entity that's more or less registered with the SEC.
Okay.
So I did it for myself so I could actually have the knowledge. And then I first started paper trading, which is just like simulation trading. Mm-hmm. And then I actually got it's $25,000 minimum to actually start day trading
mm-hmm.
consistently. Which means essentially it's they call you an intraday trader. So you trade multiple times throughout the single day. Now, this is also during 2008, 2009, so it was perfect. For those who might be listening later, that was the financial housing crisis.
Right.
And I was trading on stocks, so there was plenty of volatility in housing stocks and made a good
yeah,
money.
Yeah, so day traders, what they do is they're looking at the spread between people asking for a certain price for their stock
mm-hmm.
and how much people are willing to bid to pay for that stock, right?
Correct.
And so you're riding those halves mm-hmm. and quarters and, you know, dollars between the two. Yeah, I knew somebody who did that. His father, or it was his father that did it, and he came to visit us once when I was working in a warehouse, and he had his little computer station set up, and it was kind of interesting how you would think that day traders are sitting there like frantically doing stuff, but he was so calm. It was just like
you need to be very calm.
Click, and then like 20 minutes later, click, and then it was done. So you're doing this 5 days a week, or were you just
5 days a week, every day, and then ended up reading other things in between there. So like the reason I actually stopped doing it wasn't because it wasn't good. It was because literally it was consuming all of my time, because what you don't realize is that you are consistently actually reading news or paying attention to other earnings reports and watching things on various companies. So the having more time portion of that didn't really actually come out that way.
Oh, you're a slave to the data because you have to be ahead of everybody else.
Like exactly what you just said. Like when you think about stock trading floors, for example, mm-hmm. the setup that I actually had was literally six monitors and two, one on top, one on top, one on top. So three on the bottom and then one on each of the top of them.
Hmm. And you were doing this at home or were we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I got level two quotes obviously are a necessity. So level two quotes are so you can see book depth. So most people when you used to actually look at a buy and sell, you typically only see whatever the top of the book is, but everything below that. So let's say that AT&T is at $32. So you might see somebody say, okay, I'm willing to buy it at $32.01, and then you say somebody's willing to buy it at $31.99. So that's the spread, which is only a penny difference. Well, you might have put in an order that, let's say, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to purchase AT&T at $31. So that's something that you wouldn't be able to typically see with what are called level one quotes. So level two allow you to see book depth in addition to some other things.
Hmm. And so how long did you do that?
That was for 5 years, yeah.
5 years, wow. So it was a five-day-a-week thing, basically, every day, no vacation, just you couldn't take time off to do it, right?
The interesting thing about that is, like, as you just mentioned, you have to be very, very emotionally stable to do something like that because you are playing with your money. So in order to watch things go up and down and still have enough faith in your ability to make correct calls on them is something that is very emotionally taxing for a lot of people, to watch your money literally go up and down. Right. So that's something you definitely have to take into consideration. So some days I would come in and I would work 20 minutes, and then other days I'd be waiting there watching for particular things, so I'd spend an entire day there. Oh. It really depended on how soon the particular parameters I was looking for came up.
Okay. And then, so then you stopped at some point. What made you stop?
I had made enough money, and then I was actually like, okay, I need to go do something else because this is literally consuming much, much more of my time than I need.
Okay. And then what was the next thing you did from there?
I had always had an interest in computers my entire life. And so more so what ended up happening was I used to be a Windows user. And I'm probably say this on here. The statute of limitations has expired.
Is this a Computers Anonymous thing?
It's exactly that.
Hi, I'm Cody, and I'm a Windows user.
So what ended up happening was this was when CS6, which is Photoshop's CS6 version, had come out, and then right as they had transitioned to Creative Cloud. So Creative Cloud essentially consistently talks to their servers so that they can make sure that you have proper activation keys, and that's a lot of what current software companies have actually moved towards. Well, for me in particular, I had started using CS6, and then I went to use Creative Cloud. And I had downloaded a copy of Creative Cloud. And what a lot of people don't know is that if even Creative Cloud products, you can actually like firewall them off, activate them via a trial version, and you'll still be able to use them, and then you can just reset the clock on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that there was plenty of free software that was already available to me that I could use. So specifically in this instance, there's a program called GIMP, which stands for GNU Image Manipulation Program, which is a completely free program. You guys could actually go download it today as a Photoshop replacement if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is just really stupid. Like, why am I going to use and essentially pirate a program that the only things I'm using it for are more or less like a few like cropping things here and there,
mm-hmm.
and by no means actually like professional grade for what I needed. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really have a lot of like lesser alternatives for people at that time.
Yeah, they still really don't.
They still don't. So again, I highly recommend you check out GIMP, guys, because you can go download it regardless of whatever
platform
you have. Unless you're
a student, because the student version is really cheap.
Again, still go download GIMP. And the reason being is because if you're using Photoshop and you're a student, for example, you're still perpetuating that. So you're going to have to, at some point, regardless of if you start your own company or you go to a new company, you're going to have to pay for that software. I've got a better alternative for you. How about you start using GIMP, which is already free to begin with. It will be free when you go into the professional world. And if you find a feature that you need, you can always A, pay to have them implemented, or B, look for the plugins that someone else has designed, because that's really the basis of free and open source software.
Well,
and
I guess,
it started that way.
Yeah, and so that's going to lead to probably our conversation after the break, too, is also, because that's the question, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, like, it's easy to go to, say, Adobe, because they're the name brand and there's trust.
Exactly.
I know it's going to work. I know that, you know, if there's a problem, I can Google how to do it. If I don't know the training, I can go online and watch a YouTube video. There's seven people that tell you how to do, you know, everything.
In 14 different ways.
In 14 different languages, yeah, too, for that matter. Right? And so so how does one, you know, go through the process to find, like, this program? You know, like, how do I trust that one is going to be the one that works?
So that's actually a very good point. In my personal opinion, I think even 10 years ago, it would have been significantly harder to actually find free and open source software that was readily available that actually did everything that you needed to do and was also had enough tutorials and other things to tell you how to do them if you weren't a professional at it. Now I think we're really coming to a point where that's not nearly as much of an issue as it was, but there's always still going to be particular things that you encounter that might be better suited. So I'm a hard, hard free and open source software advocate. But the number one thing that I say, especially for business owners, is you need to do what works for you. So regardless of what your platform is, so whether or not you're using Windows, you're using Mac, you're using Linux, whatever you need to use for your business and to actually achieve your business is probably what you want to go for first. However, there's also plenty of software in your life that you might just be using, like I was, for just cropping stuff. And so GIMP is a perfectly fine alternative for you to use. And when you potentially want to expand your knowledge on how to use the program, the options are there for you to do so now.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with all those softwares. And then even with doing, like, our website is done with WordPress.
Yep, WordPress is free and open source
software.
So
it's free and open, which is nice. And there's all these extensions. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes the common extensions for common tasks that you would do in a website, it's like, how do you pick the one? So even if you try to look, if you try to Google even, you know, top 10 customer response forms, you'll see, but the thing is, you'll even see in the reviews, you know, a top 10 list that's totally different than somebody else's top 10 list.
Oh yeah.
So there's not even consensus among the reviewers. Obviously they probably have, you know, certain tie-ins to these other companies or products, but since they're all free anyway, it's like, why would they?
They're not actually necessarily offering.
Well, the ones I'm looking for say they're all free. The ten free ones that this guy says are the best, and the other 10 free that this other company, you know, even not even guys like even like Wired Magazine and versus CNET's top 10 are different.
So my favorite thing to do when I tell people this is I say, all right, you ready for this? It's free, so go download it, and if you don't like it, delete it. That's all it takes.
Well, it's just the time. You know, it's the time to go do that research. So it's like, you know, with WordPress, it makes sense because, like you said, it's a small, and usually it's a smaller thing. It's a form or it's some data thing, and then you'll know right away if it's going to work for you.
You also have paid options for WordPress installations as well and WordPress plugins that are, they have potentially free versions. WordFence is actually a fantastic plugin that I like to use and I recommend for every single business owner with a website. And the reason being is because their free version will take care of 90% of what a small business owner is going to need. So use their free version. And if you want to and you feel like you need the additional features that are in there, you can pay to have the premium features in there. So yes, the free version will more than take care of most people's situations. So why not go ahead and use something, see how it works, and then if you want to, go support them, sponsor them, all those things. Red Hat, which Red Hat is a Linux-based company, largest provider of free and open source software. There's slightly a few differences between their CentOS version, which is their community edition, and Red Hat itself. Red Hat is more like a Windows environment, or it kind of looks like a Windows environment that a lot of companies and enterprises will use as a replacement as opposed to using Windows or using Mac.
Okay.
And they give their product away completely for free.
Yeah, I guess I've heard
and
of them too.
Do support. Yeah. So that's how they make their money, is they do support contracts and things like that, which is always going to be needed in large enterprise environments.
Okay, so they make their money off of the customers that do need their help in, you know, in large bulk. And then they give everybody else, the smaller guys, get the crumbs for free.
And IBM basically just actually purchased them very recently, I think within the past year or two.
Oh, they did, huh? Did that make ripples in the community then? Because it's like they're worried the old giant company that used to be is now.
Of course, you have 15 different opinions on everything.
So you're going to get people who never use Red Hat stuff again because they're using the old guard company now.
I believe the similar quote is, if you get 10 lawyers in a room and you ask their opinion on something, you'll get 50 responses.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. We're going to do a news break, and then we'll come back more with Cody.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump are headed to El Paso, Texas, after visiting a hospital in Dayton, Ohio. Both cities had mass murders take place in them over the weekend. And on the campaign trail in Burlington, Iowa, former Vice President Joe Biden attacks President Trump, saying the president's rhetoric is dangerous. North Korea says leader Kim Jong-un supervised a live-fire demonstration of a newly developed short-range ballistic missile. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaks about the effort to denuclearize North Korea.
We are hopeful that in the coming weeks we'll get back to the negotiating table to achieve that. We watch the actions that they're taking, the actions that are taking place inside of North Korea. And we are mindful that when we came in, there was nuclear testing taking place. That has not occurred. There aren't long-range missiles being fired. Those are both good things. Now the task is for us to deliver on what the two leaders agreed to back in June of last year.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck. This is truck oil. This is hunting, fishing, camping way off the grid oil. This is climbing mountains in the rain, snow, and mud oil. This is hauling the world's greatest tailgate party halfway across the country, oil. This is not top-down cruising to the corner store for cupcakes oil. This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck, just for your truck and SUV, oil. Find Shell Rotella Gas Truck at your local Advance Auto Parts today.
Hello, we're back. Again, let's see the weather. It's still kind of cloudy out there. It really didn't storm yet. I know when I was driving in, there was a lot of thunder in the background, but there's still storms brewing, and they'll last through the night. And again, like I said, the weather should get a little bit cooler, back down into like the low 80s for the weekend, and should be good for then. Let me just adjust our volume a little bit here. I guess it helps if I talk into the microphone too. Okay, so we're back with Cody Hofstetter here, and we were talking about the open source software. So that kind of leads us into the hackathon that he entered. So it was 2017 was the first hackathon that we had, the Hack 100 and hackathon. So how did you hear about it? Do you remember? Did you go to a meetup before the hackathon?
I think it was actually through the meetup, actually.
Okay, so then you found out about the meetup somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I think from meetup.com.
Okay, so so what made you decide to do it? Like, because you had the idea sort of ahead of time, or?
So I have plenty of ideas rolling in my head all the time, right. And it seemed like a good opportunity to actually put together a quick team and prototype something.
So how'd you find your team members?
I had known one or two of the people beforehand, and then we actually had a like round table discussion at the coffee place, which is Stengel, if I remember correctly.
Oh, at the Stengel, that's the Turbo something.
The coffee place that's
next to Bluefish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to remember what they were and give them a shout out next time.
Yeah. So we ended up having a particular meetup for everyone to get together and actually like meet people, present ideas, and things like that. And that's where I ended up getting two or three of the other team members, and then we picked up one more when we got to the Hack 100 event who I didn't know. So okay. I had only met them a few times before that.
Oh, that's right. I think the one member of your team, I remember he came in by himself. He was like frantically kind of like typing on his computer. And I said, well, you're programming already? And he's like, no, I'm just practicing or something. So because he was a free agent and he wanted to make sure he had all his stuff ready to be able to show people if they wanted to check him out. So, yeah, I do remember him. So then what was your project?
So we had an open source point of sale system, and the reason that I had decided to bring that particular idea was because for the restaurant I had bought a PNC Clover system, which was like $1,000-something. Essentially took it out of the box, used it exactly one time, and put it back in because it didn't have what we were more or less told that it was going to have with it, and then of course they wanted to charge additional fees on and other things like that, and I'm like, all I need to do right now is just return it because I've literally taken it out once and haven't even used it. It does not work, period, the way that we actually need it to. And mm-hmm. So they were like, sorry, like you signed a contract for it, we can't do anything about it. So I was like, in much, much politer words than I'm going to use now, was essentially like, okay, I see how it is.
Yeah.
So I decided to more or less design an open point-of-sale system that any business could use as a modular design, so it doesn't matter, inventory tracking, time management, things like that, and allow the business owner to actually choose what they needed to put into it, because you can always choose more. It's harder to choose less. So start with something small, build on top of it.
Right.
And if everything's modular, it makes it much easier. And really all I wanted to do was to give it away for free to eat some of PNC's lunch, because I was very angry at that point, because anger is a fantastic motivator.
Revenge. Revenge innovation.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a topic for a show.
Yeah, there
you go. I'll have to do some research on that, how many other revenge innovators there are. I guess what Facebook, if you believe the movie, is a revenge innovation.
There you go.
For the girl that dumped him, so...
Look how well that turned out.
Yeah, so I guess there is something to that. Wow, we just coined a phrase, too, revenge innovation. Great.
You need a new incubator, and that's the only thing you take in.
We'll just start going to divorce courts. And
yeah, there.
People.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
We'll put the new 100 in Innovation Center. I'm sure Mark Salek, if he's listening.
He'll
We're
going
to move it right next to divorce court right down the road here.
I got our first ad been like, does your significant other – have any good ideas? Tell us about them.
So I remember at the time we weren't involved as much with the hackathon. It was more we sponsored it and we were kind of on the outside of it. But I remember your talk being one of the better ones. And I'm pretty sure that's why you guys won, because, not besides the fact that you had a good project, but say the top three were really good ideas. I remember the police one was pretty good. And then Bob had his one with his little tracker thing, was a good idea too. But what it was is that, and that's the lesson too, is that, you know, you can have the best idea in the world, but if you can't present it, you know, nobody's going to listen to you. Nobody's going to want to buy it if they don't either understand it or be able to be excited about it. And you did both. You were able to explain it, but also got everybody kind of, especially people who had been staying up all night.
I hadn't slept whatsoever. I actually, that day, I went and I think I left, and then I literally set up for my restaurant at the Shad Fest down in Lambertville, and then I came back.
Oh, wow.
So I worked part of that day and then didn't sleep, worked there, and then still came back and presented afterwards.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the open source, in the time that we had before the last break, and then we'll do our innovation or story with the computer virus thing, is that to tie in some of the privacy stuff that you're into, I guess it seems like it naturally progresses out of the open source kind of concepts, right? I mean, you don't need these big companies in your wallet, and then you also don't want them in your diary or in your, or what you're using your wallet to pay for too, right? So what's something that, is that part of what your business does as far as protecting people's privacy or setting up companies for that? Or
so the privacy portion of it really in general is more a personal thing, and I enjoy actually doing speaking events on it. You were saying earlier that you would watch one of my 2017 talks.
There's a 2017 talk that you can find on YouTube that Cody did in Ohio. It's a really good talk, by the way. So I'll try to put a link to it in the Facebook feed later.
Appreciate it. But that one was actually, I believe, titled Privacy and Anonymity in the Modern Age, Getting Hit by an 18-Wheeler.
Yes.
So if that didn't allude to it, more or less your privacy is extremely diminished and people really don't understand what exactly they're giving away and they're giving to these companies, even Facebook, for example. People consistently putting on images of themselves. That's actually a fantastic example, because before, when you would upload your photos to Facebook, you used to have your EXIF data, which is metadata that is inside every photo that you take that tells you what camera you used, what your resolution was, potentially your geolocation for it. So let's say you take pictures in your house and you've uploaded them to Facebook. Well, guess what? Now Facebook and whoever else wants to know now knows exactly where you live. Because if you're like, oh, my new refrigerator. Well, guess what?
Right.
Now I know exactly where you live. If you put on vacation photos and you're like, hey, I'm on vacation this week. Well, guess what? Now for potential people who want to break into your house, they know you're not going to be there because you're going to be away on vacation for however long.
Right. That's something I remember early on in Facebook that people were warning people about in general, because And so kind of like I've almost made that habit that I don't post them until I'm home. Mm-hmm. So it's like then they don't have to. But I guess the thing is,
they clean your Axiff data now. But again, there was a period in which they didn't.
Well, but people tag themselves as being in a location too.
So also like, true.
You know, especially for events. So if you sign up to Facebook's events and say, hey, I'm interested, I'm going to go to this event, you know, this concert or whatever. When you get there, it's going to say, hey, you're here at the concert. Do you want to tag that you're here? You want to check in? So that's the same thing as basically giving away where you are when you are, too.
Mm-hmm. And Google owns you as well, so it's not just Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm not conglomerate biased.
Yeah. And is it basically every big company is doing this?
Is there a big company
that is not doing it? Like, say, Microsoft.
They're definitely doing
okay,
it.
Okay, they're doing it through their Windows product, though?
100%.
Okay, they're doing it through their Office product?
100%.
Okay. So we already said Google, Facebook, YouTube is obviously Google. I'm trying to think there's what other big, so like Twitter, obviously. Any of the social media.
Snapchat, medias, yeah, there you go. Snapchat.
Basically, any social media is tracking you,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's the whole purpose.
Because you are their product.
So anything that's free, you got to expect that you're being tracked.
For the most part. There's right. very, very few free things that can be provided to you where you are not the product. But that's, again, if a company is providing something to you for free, right. check into what their business model is. Even going, which I said off there when yeah. one of the commercials was playing was, there's a platform called Robinhood, which will allow you to trade stocks. So you can purchase, sell stocks. And it's zero fees. So it's zero transaction fees. You don't have to pay buying. You don't have to pay selling. E-Trade and a lot of the other trading companies will charge you between $7.99 and $10 to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That, over time, significantly eats into your profitability. So the way that that company makes money is they're providing you a free service, and they are also making money on the cash that you have in your account that is not being used. Which they will tell you that. So that is an ability for them to provide you a service.
So they float money, your account balance, basically? They're
correct.
Floating money?
So if you're not using the cash that's currently in your account, because let's say you have $100 and $80 of it's in the stock and $20 is cash, they use a portion of that money to actually lend out to other people who are trading on margin.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So that's one way that they make them. They also make money on what are called rebate fees. So every single brokerage that you actually send your orders to, they will send them to specific exchanges, and they will get a rebate fee typically for sending your orders to those exchanges. So that's another way that they make money.
So what about, I was thinking of some of the other ones. So like another popular, obviously we talked about Adobe. Mm-hmm. So since you're paying for that, they would be tracking you too.
See, that's the thing. Like especially the Adobe is 100%. Windows, I love the newer version of Windows, and the reason being is I really wish I had thought of the idea where you have to pay for the product, and then they advertise to you, and you are the product in addition to that. Like, I totally wish I would have thought about that beforehand. I'm like, that's a great business model. Have them pay you to be advertised to.
Well, that was the AOL original model, mm-hmm. too, right? I mean, AOL, before when you logged into AOL, you'd get hit with like 5 ads you had to watch before you could even check your mail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I would hate that I would disconnect because it knew I'd have to watch 2 more advertisements before I could get to whatever I was doing. So I'd just leave it open, you know. So I'm trying to think. Then basically everything, so QuickBooks probably tracks me too from our business stuff. But then some people say, well, I mean, the only thing I look at it is I don't mind being tracked for advertising purposes. And the reason is I'd rather see an ad that does meet what I am as opposed to what I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the choice is I'm going to see an ad, say I'm drinking this, which we don't have around here. I actually got this mail order to show people at work because they never had Verner's ginger ale. Shout out to Verner's. It's like the oldest ginger ale in the United States that's still being made. It's a Midwest product. It's a very distinctive ginger
flavor to it.
And so, you know, because I was looking for this, I'm going to see ads for Verner's. You know, I'm not going to see ads for I may see ads for Pepsi because I'm searching for sodas, but I don't want to see ads for cars because I'm not in the market for a car.
Mm.
You know, so, I mean, there is that. That's the only thing I could hang any semblance of I'm willing to give up privacy for that aspect of it. But the problem is I can never – they should invent – here's another money-making idea that you can work on. Say I've already bought this Verner's. Well, say – let's do it this way. I did buy a dishwasher recently. I don't need to see ads for dishwashers for 10 more years because it's going to last me hopefully at least 10 years.
What if your dishwasher is broken?
Well, I said hopefully. So I bought one good enough that it's supposed to last at least 10 years. And history has shown, they last pretty long. So, why do I need to get hit with Home Depot, Lowe's ads for dishwashers for the next 2 months, even though I already bought one? Like, I wish there was a way you could tell the advertisers, okay, I did buy the product you tried to advertise. You can stop now or do something else.
Because that information hasn't filtered to the rest of the advertisers yet, that's why.
But they never will necessarily know.
It purely depends. So for the ad targeting thing, which you just mentioned, is the reason that they wouldn't necessarily know is, let's say that Google is the one who holds your ad information. Well, the other companies have to essentially purchase you or your ad profile in order to market to you. Right. Well, Google might have that information and then say, okay, well, I know that this person just bought a dishwasher, so now they're unlikely to do that. How long does it take for them to filter out to the rest of the companies?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because how would they know I bought a dishwasher, though?
Google or Amazon?
Yeah, how would Google
Amazon
know?
Would be – Amazon's actually a better one.
Well, Amazon would know if I bought it through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went to the Home Depot and bought it with a credit card, then how would they even know? Because Visa is not supposed to tell them, or does Visa tell them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do they really?
Not supposed to.
I mean, do you know that for sure?
I'm not going to say I know that for sure, but okay. I'll tell you what. I know that a lot of the large advertising companies – they all have the exact same pool of information that they get it from. So it's always filtering in from one source. If you ever look up people search websites, for example, they're all more or less owned by a very small number of companies, and they just filter that information out. So if they get your information from somewhere else, you can go and request them to remove it, but it's also a possibility that it just pops up in one of the other ones. And then when they re-update their database, it just repopulates it.
Hmm. All right, well, a lot of stuff to think about here. We have to hit a commercial break, and then we'll do our last story of the day and wrap it up. So if I can find out here.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we're back. Let's see, make sure you can hear me. Yeah. Okay, so in the time we have left, we have a couple minutes left. We'll talk about this story. Cody, you know this story, right? So you know about this. So it's a 30-year-old prank. Well, probably more than 30 years. It's 37 years ago this happened, the first computer virus that was distributed. Technically, the first one, if you look it up, was a DARPA engineer that was goofing around with his colleagues. But the first one that was kind of an anonymous distributed thing was from Apple II computers. If you remember
Apple
the Apple II.
Get viruses.
Yeah, because Apple's, they'd never get viruses. So it was a 15-year-old in Pittsburgh area named Rich Skrenta. I guess it's S-K-R-E-N-T-A. He created what was called the Elk Cloner. And what he did was he was a basic 15-year-old, didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, and he started getting into computers. And so his family got him an Apple II, and he was programming and spending hours and hours and hours on it. And he ended up being part of some computer group, and then he was even more excited, and he was like learning everything about it. And so this is in 1980. And if you remember the Apple II, it had two floppy disks. So you'd have one disk with your program in it, and then another disk where you could write to it. And he started playing around with creating his own games, and he ended up learning how to do machine-level programming. So he started out in BASIC, and then he started doing machine-level programming. So then he started finding all these holes in the Apple operating system that he was allowed to clone to another disk. And so what he did was, let's see where to go. So get the story right here. Okay, so he basically, do you remember how, maybe you could, without me trying to have to go through this again here. He said the funny thing about it was that when the program would write to the second disk, it would save the program on that would lock up the computer. The disk would make a certain noise, so he would know when you took that infected disk, put it into another computer, the way it booted that disk had a very distinct sound. And so he would know, even he could hear other people booting up the disk, and he knew it was an infected disk before they even heard it, because he got so used to doing this. And he said where it really hit home to him was that one day, all of a sudden, his math teacher comes yelling at him, "What did you do to my computer?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" And, "My computer won't log in, won't work." And he's like, his face drains, and he realizes, oh, that was my Elk Cloner. He somehow got it, and he didn't realize, like, he had no control of this thing. So it was kind of a lesson to him, like, computer viruses are kind of dangerous. Because, he started doing it, and he would infect his friends' computers as a joke, but then it started propagating to other computers he didn't intend to. And his math teacher figured he was the one, because he was the kid that spent his time in the computer lab all the time playing with the Apple computer. So he naturally assumed that it was Rich's fault. So so that's the lesson there.
Moral of the story, Apple computers can get infected. Yeah. They have a fantastic marketing department, though.
Yeah, they try to put hurdles mm-hmm. by having everything contained and all the hardware, contained. But
so
make programs.
Yeah, in the very, very briefest way that I say this is, because for Windows machines, you are typically the administrator on that machine, and it gives you those rights by default. For Macs, for example, especially nowadays, you are not the default administrator, so you have to explicitly enable the ability to make changes to your system like that. That's really where it comes in, because it's not giving you administrative rights by default.
Yeah, and I remember that because my wife actually had an iPhone, and she had to get the iPhone so she could do, she worked for a Fortune 500 company that they had their, I think it was their Lotus Notes or some other mm-hmm. office communication system, and she wanted to get the phone so she can load that application. But in order to do that, I had to unlock basically the rights of that, because we were basically, it's almost like hacking into the phone, because we weren't downloading it from the Apple Store. You had to actually download it.
Jailbreak it.
Yeah, and so I remember that, having to give up those rights. That seemed like a scary thing, so. All right, I see David's waiting in the wings for the next show. So, as always, we'll end the show by thanking Cody for coming.
Thank you guys for having me.
And I think we will definitely have you back. Maybe we're talking about doing a roundtable, so we'll get Cody, maybe Bob King too, some other people, and we'll talk about some issues in almost like a roundtable approach. Just want to thank all the new fans that are watching on Facebook and YouTube. Again, it's on our Zero Surge YouTube channel. Actually, your video is there as well. I did link that in the if you go to the, I think it's Zero Search Customers, I put his video there. So that is definitely a place you can look for it.
And we also gave away Zero Search products during that talk because they're a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic company.
Thank you. Thanks to the Chamber for giving me the opportunity. Mark and his team at Economic Development, hopefully we'll get him on soon. The gang back at Zero Search, Donna, Deb, Jen, Tony, Dave, John, my wife, and kids, and to all the rest of you innovators out there, the original meaning of innovator was that you were a rebel. So keep rebelling against the doubters and make your ideas a reality.
Thank you, guys.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As President Trump and the First Lady visit the sites of two fatal mass murders over the past weekend, Democratic presidential candidates continue to attack the president, including former Vice President Joe Biden.
He says guns are not the problem in mass shootings. The issue is mental health. It's a dodge. Hatred isn't a mental health issue.
Those comments, as the vice president also says the president embraces division. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he hasn't seen the latest IG report on ISIS, but believes the administration is doing what they can to get rid of the terrorist organization.
President Trump has made clear from every time I've talked to him about it, every time I've seen him speak publicly, we understand that the threat from terrorism, more broadly than just ISIS, continues to exist in the world. And we're doing all the right things, including building out a coalition like the Defeat ISIS Coalition.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FordhamResources.com. That's Fordham, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Centoya Brown walked free from a Tennessee prison on Wednesday after serving 15 years behind bars for the murder of a man she says bought her so he could have sex with her when she was 16. Former Democratic Governor of Tennessee Bill Haslam explains his decision to grant Brown clemency on the Today Show.
Centoya really had done what we hope happens when people are incarcerated. In the end, we decided the right thing and that society was better off with Centoya out of prison.
Advocates for sex trafficking victims say Brown's release 36 years early is a victory for their cause. Counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, tells Fox News President Trump is focused on reforming gun laws and not the people who are criticizing him.
It is the president, not the wannabe president, who's going across this country today to try to bring people together and then returning here to Washington tonight, Bill and Sandra, waiting for Congress to do its job, put legislation on his desk that he can sign and make a difference in this country.
This is USA Radio News.
Parents, the end of summer is here. You want to get the best deal ever on a good night's sleep while you're paying for all that stuff for school supplies? How about getting the best deal ever on a MyPillow? Good night's sleep for just $69.98 for two MyPillow premium pillows, $34.99 per pillow, the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. A good night's sleep is worth twice the price. So go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA, get great savings on a good night's sleep.
New claims of sexual abuse are facing the Boy Scouts of America. A lawsuit filed this week shows hundreds of former scouts have come forward in recent months to say they were molested. James Kretzer is one of those accusers. He sits down with NBC News and explains the toll the alleged abuse has had on his life.
I was actually sitting in the middle of the highway, the big road, waiting. And I can remember just thinking, it'll just be okay if a big truck comes by. It'll be over. I don't have to deal with this anymore.
SpaceX has another successful launch. With more, here's USA Radio Network's Wendy King.
The Amos-17 communications satellite for the Israeli company Spacecom launched from Florida despite unfavorable weather. The Falcon 9 rocket lifted off at 7:23, a half an hour later than originally scheduled due to earlier rain and clouds in the area. It was launched from Cape Canaveral. Spacecom calls the Amos-17 the most advanced satellite designed for Africa. It also will cover parts of Europe and the Middle East. The Israeli satellite, which was built by Boeing, deployed into orbit about 30